From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Not long ago, Kendall Wilcox came out. His friends and family knew he was gay, but not his employer. And this is a big deal because he works for the LDS Church. He teaches at Brigham Young University. He's a producer at BYU TV. When he spoke to a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, he knew everyone else would finally know. And he's still at BYU, still employed by the LDS Church, because he can be gay and Mormon at the same time. It's complicated, of course, and there are questions about just how gay he can be or how Mormon he really is. But if you ask Wilcox, he just is 100% gay, 100% Mormon. Kendall Wilcox is making a film that explores that tension between faith and sexual identity. And today in the program, he's joining us, talking about his attempts to change the conversation. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. By now, you may have heard the story of Kendall Wilcox. When Wilcox spoke to Salt Lake Tribune reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack not so long ago to tell his story, he knew that he would be coming out. That would be his coming out publicly that he is gay. What most find amazing about the story is that Wilcox, who is now openly gay, works for the LDS Church, teaches at Brigham Young University. He's a producer at BYU TV. Now, Wilcox knows there's an element of novelty in this story, and frankly, he says he is trying to capitalize on that to get people interested in having a conversation about homosexuality and Mormonism. He's in the process of producing a film he hopes will change the way people talk about the issue or argue about the issue. He says the tone of this conversation has become increasingly polemic and ugly. Today in the program, he's joining us to talk about his story and about the film he's producing. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have comments or questions, we invite you to join us at 801-585-WEST, 801-585-9378. Our email address is radiowest@kuer.org. Kendall Wilcox is a senior producer for BYU TV. He's an adjunct professor in BYU's College of Fine Arts and Communications. His current film project is called Far Between. It's an independent documentary, we should point out. He is also spearheading the Empathy First initiative, which is aimed at changing the tone of the public discourse. We'll talk about all of this as we go along. And he's joining us, Kendall Wilcox is, from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. And Kendall Wilcox, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doug. Happy to be here.
Well, I wanted to start, if we could, with what Mormons call the Sacred Grove. It's a stand of trees in upstate New York where members of the LDS faith believe their founder, Joseph Smith, went to ask God about, you know, his faith and his purpose. And at some point in your life, and not so long ago, you sought out a similar kind of experience. I wanted to start with that story, if you don't mind.
Sure. I mean, it was kind of funny that it had been in our plans for the making of the documentary in terms of, you know, the script, our blueprint, that, well, in order to convey all the layers of meaning that we're trying to a general audience, not just a Mormon audience or even just a sort of a gay-friendly audience, but general, we knew that we needed to get into some of the very basic and fundamental stories of the, you know, the founding stories of the Mormon Church in order to make sense and give context to where we go later on in the film. So we set out to go to the Sacred Grove to film what was going to be more of a little scene that really was just a launch pad into a slightly longer detailed explanation of the founding stories of the church. And sort of being a producer and a producer for the church, I'd been there before, you know, on assignment. And, you know, when I get into producer mode, maybe I become a little less subjective and more on the objective side and, you know, getting the business done. And so as we were approaching, I just thought, oh, you know, we're going to get in there, tell the story, get out, then we got to get to the next location, etc. But as we entered, literally, as we're entering the grove on the path, and my cameraman is filming, in my head I'm thinking, again, as a producer, okay, who is my protagonist right now? What does he or she need to express about what he's thinking, feeling, what his objectives are for this upcoming scene, and how are we going to accomplish that? And it hit me, again, I can be sort of thick-headed at times, it hit me that, oh, this, I'm talking about myself here. Oh, my gosh. And had this sort of rush of emotion regarding obviously the pressure I was feeling for what this scene or this moment for myself could become. But immediately beginning to draw parallels between my own situation and that of Joseph Smith as he describes his experiences that led him to enter the Sacred Grove and ask for direction from God.
Wait, meaning what? That he was seeking and were seeking.
Exactly. That we were seekers. And what struck me particularly was this idea of a quote, you know, given by Joseph Smith after telling of his experiences in the Grove, that he said that I knew it and I knew God knew it and I could not deny it. And that struck me deeply in that moment that I wanted that. That I wanted that level of certainty and conviction about my experience of sexuality, about my feelings or testimony, as Mormons say, about the validity of the church and all this certainty of how to navigate the space in between those two. All of a sudden the weight of that expectation just came down hard. But then that gave way in sort of a beautiful way to just the visceral reaction to being in the Grove itself. I mean, I react, you know, sort of naturally to nature and the power of the sort of bucolic setting, and it just overwhelmed me. And then this flood of feelings, emotions, thoughts came to me, and to the degree that I had to ask the camera guy and say, you know what, change of plans, you go off and film leaves and bugs and so on, and I have to have a moment. This is actually happening.
But wait, so your question wasn't, is this church true, which is a question that some Mormons put. Mm-hmm. It seems like at that point you knew that. That wasn't what you were asking. And it wasn't, am I gay? You knew that too.
Mm-hmm.
So what were you feeling? What was the certainty that you were hoping to get, that I can reconcile it to?
It's headed that's sort of the end game of this reconciliation. But there's so much between where I was at and still am and that sort of end goal of some sort of clear-headed, spiritually confirmed sense of reconciliation. I mean, it's so nuanced. Even the question of, okay, so I have deep feelings for the church, a testimony, even if you will, of the church, and have a clear sense of my experience of sexuality. But what do I really feel on a deeper visceral level? And what I've been able, that experience literally was a kickoff to understanding about what's changing within me as I am now approaching all these issues from a place of openness. And what has changed within me is that trying to approach all of this for years, for decades, for myself, from a place of closetedness and all that that means in terms of I had shut down and closed off so much of my sense of self-trust, of self-love, of trust in deity, in communications with deity. All that had been slowly but surely shut down because on the one hand, I...
Are you trying to say you were angry with God?
No. There were some tough moments. Let's just say our relationship's been rocky. But no, I had as I learned through, you know, messages from my culture to distrust one of the most fundamental aspects of my experience of life, in terms of my sexuality and my experience of that and what it felt like and how I enacted that and so on. All of that I had...
Distrust your urges, your sexual urges, your sexual sense of who you were.
Exactly. Yeah. I shut all that down. And in the process of shutting that down, I also hadn't realized that I was shutting down a sense of connection to the deep core of myself from a spiritual perspective as well. So that Grove experience sort of kicked off an awakening where I realized, wow, I'm a different person. I'm engaging with these two areas of my life in a very, it's hard to describe, but very different way than I was before. I'm open. I'm learning how to trust myself and my instincts and listening to what we call the Spirit or the Holy Ghost from a new place, genuinely a new place.
I want to come back to that in a moment. But let me ask, I mentioned this idea of it being a novelty, and I think for a lot of people, it doesn't make any sense. Wait a minute, he's gay. And he's not just gay. He's openly gay, and he is working for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that doesn't reconcile. And what you've talked about, and part of this process that you're hoping, I gather, to get people to understand, is that there is such a thing as an average homosexual Mormon, right?
Oh, sure.
So let me start with that question. What is the average homosexual Mormon? What is the experience of an average homosexual Mormon? Closeted? Know that they're gay? Know that they have strong spiritual feeling? I mean, what is it? What is the average experience?
Well, that is definitely one of the main things we're getting at in the documentary is to portray a detailed portrait and a nuanced portrait of what it is like to be a quote-unquote average, which, you know, I guess I'm a little uncomfortable with that term.
Why?
Well, everybody is so idiosyncratic and you know, specific to their own experience.
Sure.
So what we're trying to actually describe is more of a very broad and nuanced explanation of what it is like to be both homosexual and Mormon, feel feelings for the Mormon Church at the same time. And what is that reconciliation or lived experience like? So in terms of what that looks like, I mean, I can describe it for myself. And then, you know, so far we're about 40% of the way through the filming and having amazing conversations with a huge, I mean, as diverse as we can get, swath of individuals who represent, you know, different points along the spectrum of what it is like to be homosexual and Mormon. And that can include high levels of orthodoxy all the way to not attending the church any longer because they've felt so uncomfortable and sort of in the Mormon culture, all of that. And then also all sorts of along the spectrum of what it is to be homosexual today. What does that feel like, look like? How does one express it and engage with it? So it's a big, complicated answer, which is why we're making a movie.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. Well, let me help you sort of break this down, at least the way I've been thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And first, let's establish your sort of bona fides. Grew up Mormon, raised in the faith, did a two-year mission, taught at the Missionary Training Center. I mean, got a job at Brigham Young University. It's about as Mormon as it gets, we could say.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so here's the question. You're a believer, Kendall Wilcox, a wholehearted, unapologetic believer in this faith. Maybe not in everything the church as an institution does, but you believe in the Mormon message, the Mormon dogma. Is that right?
Depends on what you mean. Depends on what we're really talking about. I understand sort of where you're going and why you're going there, but that's in some ways almost the antithesis of the film, at least as the film opens up and develops. At the top of the film, yes, that's where we engage the story at first is, okay, the presumption is 100% stereotypical, whatever you want to conjure up in terms of orthodox adherent to the faith and 100% sort of orthodox homosexual.
Wait, you're saying there's no such thing as 100% orthodox person. There are every person's experience in that way is all over the map. Gay or not.
Absolutely, okay, but that's okay. We'll start there.
Okay, sure.
At the beginning of the film, and even in my life, that's where I've started this journey that we're documenting. Is okay. We'll start at that assumption, but then break it down. And what is really going on for myself? What is really going on with me and these hundreds of other people that I'm talking to? In terms of what does it mean to be an adherent or orthodox believing member of the church, a practicing member? And what I'm finding is are beautiful stories of these highly nuanced and complex and most importantly conscientious sort of individuals and engagements with the Mormon faith that. The words like orthodox and 100% and so on just quickly fall away in terms of relevance and helpfulness to a conversation.
Okay.
That's what we're finding.
Okay, so let me ask you this. 'Cause that tension, I think, and I said this sort of in the introduction, 'cause most people are going to be hearing that and they're going to say, well, look, you can't be – it's an either or. You can't be a believer – and be gay because there is an inherent tension there. So I wanted to ask you this. I mean, you've said this. You said that being gay is not a handicap or an impediment that God imposed on some unlucky mortals, but yet another attribute for engaging the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I want to get at what you mean by that because Of course, you believe you were born this way. It seems like Mormons struggle, though, with this idea of where a gay person fits in their religious worldview. I mean, because you hear people talk about the fact that, okay, yes, now Mormons can say you can be gay and can still be included in the faith as long as you're not sexually active, as long as you're, mm-hmm. as long as you remain celibate. And mm-hmm. we'll talk about sexuality in a moment. But, like, is this a temporary situation, one that you just have to sort of bear? Like, I've heard it being described by some Mormons as it's like, some people are born with this propensity to be alcoholics or drug abusers or whatever, and you just have to overcome that. Mm-hmm. How do you say, how do you explain how God made you as a gay person?
Well, there's so much, that was the huge, there's lots of assumptions packed in there that you've conveyed.
Unpack them. And you're
conveying, again, you're just sort of conveying the culturally held, widely held ideas and beliefs about what it's like to be homosexual and Mormon. For example, you know, saying, well, of course you believe you're born that way. No, not of course. The jury's out both, excuse me, from a scientific perspective, as far as I've been researching, and also theologically, and therefore...
So you're not settled on that. You think you may not have been born gay.
I'm not going to presume to know.
Okay.
And therein lies the power. If we can engage these ideas and these concepts and these widely held beliefs and stereotypes with some humility.
They're assumptions.
And assumptions, yeah. But approach them with some humility, which is not the same as acquiescence. It's just some humility of saying, I don't know for sure, and I'm going to extend that sort of humility onto other people and say, well, you know, with all due respect, you don't necessarily know for sure either. But the power for me that I'm tapping into is in the ability to engage with this, with all these issues, with an open heart, with an open mind, trusting in my own instincts, which is a whole new experience as a gay Mormon.
So that is so interesting, Kendall Wilcox, because it seems like what you're saying then is this is the thing I have. If it's going to be a real give and take, it can't just be me as a gay Mormon saying, you've got to accept me for who I am, and that's it. The part that you have to give is that, okay, all right, maybe I'm not born this way. Maybe there is something going on there. So it's a real give and take. It has to be
Absolutely.
For it to be legit, I guess.
And then the question becomes, well, okay, lay all those questions aside. Still, there are some quite obvious inherent tensions. Well, let's dig into that assumption that there is a tension and that it has this negative connotation. Harkening back to what you quoted me from before, what if we shift that? What if we change that and approach all of these assumptions from a different perspective, one which, you know, for me, I call an empathic level or empathic instinct,
right.
wherein I actually am willing and to lay down and engage with all of these principles and concepts with humility and with a sincere desire to empathize with all these individuals and ideas and perspectives and histories and doctrines and so on, do the work necessary to really get my head and my heart into the other space. And then let's see what happens.
So does that mean,
open-ended.
Okay, so does that mean that you have to give, so you may consider the idea, whether you think it or not, you may at least be able to consider this idea that, in fact, you are an impediment God imposed on, and you're an unlucky mortal that has been given this thing that you have to deal with until later?
I am open to that. Where I am right now, though, is that does not feel right to me.
Sure.
That doesn't feel right. That I have been living my life according to that paradigm for years, utilizing the word struggling with SSA or same-sex attraction, mm-hmm. and sort of maintaining this victim stance, which I think has also been culturally sort of upheld around me as well, even out of those who are very well intending and sort of trying to be sympathetic and saying, oh, I feel for you as you struggle with this impediment and so on, with SSA. And I'm saying, wait, I'm going to turn that on its head for me, because that was one of the first things I approached in my journey, was to say, does this resonate with me? Has this served me well in terms of healthily engaging with this issue by maintaining a victim stance of struggling? And pretty quickly, I was able to come to a conclusion that, no, that doesn't serve me. It doesn't it doesn't provide for me a sense of possibility, of open-endedness, abundance in terms of answers and solutions. That's sort of a close-ended, dead-end approach to these issues. And so I've sort of set that aside and said, you know what, however we're going to categorize this, I'm going to approach it from a perspective that, hey, these supposed tensions actually provide great opportunity to find truth and depth. You know, it's that idea from Joseph Smith, by proving opposites, we can establish all truth. So that's the stance I'm taking here.
Are you expecting, though, at some point that, all right, we're going to have this conversation, we're going to have this dialogue, at some point there is going to be an impasse. At some point you're not going to be able to give anymore. You're going to have – it just won't work. But I'll wait for that time to come. There may be an impasse down the line, but let's work as far as we can until we get there.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said except for the fact that there is definitely going to be an impasse.
You don't think that there will be?
No. Sort of ends the story. If it's there, then what's the point? Why go on the journey? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, mm-hmm. I really fundamentally do believe in this sense of possibility, openness, and abundance of answers that are out there. It's endless. But for me, the key is approaching it from a place of self-trust and self-love, and also with this from this empathic instinct.
Wait, you mean what you're saying is to go on the journey, I've got to really be settled who I am. I've got to love myself. I've got to be confident because I'm going in here to this journey and I'm going to hear some stuff that I'm not going to like or mm-hmm. it's going to make me doubt. It's going to make me question. So I've got to love myself. I've got to trust myself. I've got to be ready. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. But also let it be a humble confidence where I don't have all the answers, but I trust, I'm learning maybe really for the first time, how to trust my instincts, which again, given my Mormon upbringing and context, it is one of the most fundamentally powerful aspects of Mormon theology and doctrine. About it ties into the concepts of agency and choice and the deep, I mean, earth-shattering power that resides in living this doctrine, living this principle that I have choice, which gives me power. And if I approach it and live with it with humility, I can engage with any apparent tension or problem. And it provides me endless possibilities.
Which is stronger for you, your sexual core, your sexual identity, or your religious core, the part of you that's Mormon?
That is one of the fundamental questions. And I'm going to try to get through a really fast anecdote to explain my answer to this. I have a very good friend, old colleague, and one night we were having a lovely conversation, very sort of empathic conversation where there was no judgment in the air and it was just a definite questioning to understand where one another's coming from. She is a very Orthodox Mormon, comes from a very Orthodox family. And she posited this sort of question to me based on some sort of counsel and advice given to her by her mother, which was that her mother had told her that, you know, we all, according to sort of Mormon theology, believe that every human being on this planet has this thing called the light of Christ, which is this deep innermost place within us that really helps us understand what is right and what is wrong in any given moment or situation. And so her mother was telling her that these homosexuals, I think is how it was put, as they engage with their homosexuality to whatever level that may be in terms of behavior and so on, they know because of the light of Christ, which is you can't take that away from anyone. They know at some level that what they are or what they are doing is inherently wrong. It is wrong.
Yeah.
And she said, she put that to me in a very gentle, open-ended way. How do you react to that?
Knowing you were gay.
Yeah. We had that conversation. Sure. And it was so beautiful and so helpful because I sat with it for, it felt like eternity of silence between us and did really a sort of a full body soul check. Like, how do I resonate? What do I feel? And being confident enough within our context of relationship to be able to say anything, to agree, to acquiesce, to object. And as I did this soul check, it helped me access one of the, what felt feels like the innermost core of myself. I was trying to access that place, that feeling, whatever it is within us, within myself, that where I do feel what she was describing as this light of Christ, this sort of divine compass for right and wrong. And as I was accessing that, trying to feel, sort of try to sense it from that level, I realized that from that very same depth within myself, within my core, within my soul, within my spirit, out of that same place is from which I feel my sense of attraction toward members of the same sex. It felt inseparable in terms of on that instinct, base, ineffable, intangible level of myself. And so, that's what I shared with her. And that has continued to sort of, that realization has opened up for me over the past month or two, in thinking about that continuing to check, is that still how I really feel? And it is. And so coming from that perspective, I experience both my theological aspirations and my desires, my aspirations to connect with higher meaning and also my sense of attraction to the same sex from the same place. So I don't know if that answers your question
or
not. But
it does. Kendra Wilcox is with us. His film project is called Far Between. Also the founder of the Empathy First Initiative, and you can find links on our website at KUER.org/Radio West. You can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Not long ago, Utah filmmaker Kendall Wilcox decided to come out, to say publicly that he is gay. But here's the thing. He works for the LDS Church. In fact, he teaches at Brigham Young University. But his coming out didn't mean he was leaving his job or the church. If he can, he's staying put. Today in the program, he's joining us to talk about his story and about a film he's producing that he hopes will change the conversation about homosexuality and Mormonism. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. So I want to get to this question about changing what you see as the conversation, how the conversation has played out. But I want to start with a moment that seemed important to you. Last October, Boyd K. Packer, he's a high-ranking member of the LDS Church, in fact, second highest-ranking official in the church right now, he said at a talk at the church's general conference that same-sex attraction can be changed. He called homosexuality impure and unnatural. And the talk, of course, generated a lot of controversy. Gay rights activists staged a protest at church headquarters. But when the church published Packer's speech online the next week, it had been edited to reflect the church's official position that the causes of homosexuality are not known and that being gay wasn't the problem, that acting on homosexual feelings was the sin. But still, the damage had been done in many ways, and it seemed like that talk was an important sort of clincher in the way you were thinking about all of this. Talk about how.
Well, it hit me on two different ways. First of all, I actually didn't react really negatively to the words that he expressed in terms of sort of his stance on the nature, the origin, the mutability, et cetera, of homosexuality, and how it fits into the church's understanding of our purpose here on earth.
And Wait a minute. He called homosexuality impure and unnatural.
That wasn't new. That's not new news. Let's be honest.
Okay. All right.
I mean,
so you weren't responding to that. You were like, I've heard that before.
Yeah, we've heard that before, and I wasn't dismissing it either.
No. But what bothered you was the way people were reacting.
What bothered me was the reaction.
Yeah. Okay.
And but then also within that, my reaction to his words as well was the thing that did stand out to me, which unfortunately isn't really isn't in the printed version. It's on the video version that's on YouTube of his actual, you know, spoken address, which to me, I know there's official and unofficial, et cetera. Those are the words that came from his mouth, and I tend to listen to that more.
Sure.
But when he sort of laid out this flow of logic for him within a doctrinal context of explaining this notion of being born that way, quote unquote, and how that can or cannot fit into the Mormon Church's doctrinal understanding of the nature and function and purpose of this life, according to the what we call the plan of salvation. And because of that, and because of his context and his approach to understanding these things, he came to this idea that it's not possible. It's not possible to be born that way within the context of this understanding of the doctrine. And he said, because basically, why would a loving Heavenly Father do such a thing? Let us be born. Let somebody be born that way.
So this is Packer's logic that he gets from the Mormon
exactly,
gospel.
Which is exactly. And
so it's incredibly subjective.
And yet official at the same time.
Okay, that's the point, right? I mean, that is
exactly.
Keep going.
Exactly.
Sorry,
but for me, speaking to that subjective experience, what it did for me was it actually helped me engage with him on an empathic level, like I never had done before, actually, because those words kept ringing in my head. Why would a loving Heavenly Father do such a thing? And to me, again, this is my experience, my reaction. To me. That helped open up a sense of a vision, sort of an empathic engagement with him, thinking about him trying to reconcile this notion of being born that way within the context of the gospel. And for him, genuinely, it comes to an impasse. And he says, "Tis not so," was his words.
Right.
Why would a loving Heavenly Father do such a thing? And when he put it in that context of he believes in a loving Heavenly Father. He has a deep sense of connection and belief in this loving, all-powerful being. And in this context of flow of logic, why would he do that? To me, that indicated some deep wrestling on his part, a deep intellectual, theological, and emotional wrestling that he had done with this, obviously, over decades of time, which he came to a certain conclusion, which many people reject and are uncomfortable with. To me, that wasn't the point at that moment. I don't necessarily care about the final summation. It's the work that he did as a human being, as a fellow human being, trying to wrap his head and heart around the same issue that I am trying to wrap my head and heart around. And I felt such deep love, compassion coming from him.
Wow.
in the act of having engaged so deeply with these issues, and just in that expression of those words, why would a loving Heavenly Father do that? That is the question, isn't it? And that was the same question I had been and am still wrestling with. But to hear another human being on that level, with that level of responsibility and also history of engagement with Mormon theology and doctrine, to express it in that way melted my heart genuinely in a beautiful way. And I'm grateful for that.
So, but what were you hearing then
exactly.
from the gay community, for example? Okay, so the reaction was, wait a minute, Kendall Wilcox, that is a stretch. You're mm-hmm. having this love that he's somehow, at least he's intellectually engaging with the issue, as opposed to what they saw, which I imagine was some version of he's an old bigot.
An old-fashioned bigot
who's speaking an old ideology that is lacking in compassion, lacking in any sense of any sort of acknowledgement of, of charity, what a religious leader should be. That's what you were hearing, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah, that's definitely what the sort of in a sense the other side, even though I don't like to set up this dialectic that's what we're hearing from the other side. And then back on the sort of Mormon Orthodox side, individuals are coming forward in the defense of President Packer and the doctrines, and so this heated battle ensues back and forth. So much deeply vitriolic, divisive rhetoric and rancor.
And that's the thing you wanted to fix.
And that's what disheartened me,
yeah.
Actually. It first took me to a deep place of severe depression and angst. I mean, the deepest I had felt in years.
Wait. So your anguish over this wasn't, and you went to Boulder Mountain, you contemplated mm-hmm. ending your own life, and it wasn't
exactly.
because that old church leader thinks I'm impure and unnatural. It's
Absolutely
that
not.
It's it wasn't that. It was that there's no way we're going to be able to reconcile this because you saw that impasse. You saw
exactly.
that. Okay.
But the impasse was in how we're engaging with one another about
right.
the issues,
yeah, yeah.
not in the believing that there's an inherent dead end to this and that there's an inherent impasse. There are ways we can work and communicate together to navigate our differences that can have open-ended, that can be open-ended in their constructiveness and their ability to make our lives better and allow us to hold space for our differences with one another. But that moment then of feeling like, no, that there is no way. Nobody's actually listening or talking to each other as human beings. And I, for sure, in those moments, did not feel like I was being addressed as a human being. I was being addressed or utilized as sort of an object, a tool for rhetoric back and forth, rather than as an individual with thoughts, feelings, and emotions who had lived this tension for decades. And that disheartened me to the degree where I thought, I don't want to live in this society. I really don't. I had no energy or sense of will to continue on.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Mary Ellen is with us calling from Ogden. Mary Ellen, welcome. Sorry, go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering about the focus on empathy in Kendall's new organization that supports the work of the documentary. And
Mary Ellen, I'm going to put you on hold for a minute and hope you can get a better line. She's referring to the idea of empathy. Mm-hmm. And Kendall, let's put that off for a moment and we'll get back
sure.
to that. Let me take another call. Susan is with us, hopefully with a better line in Provo.
Landline.
Hi.
Hi, Kendall.
Hi.
I'm from Kendall's neighborhood, and I just wanted to say how excited we are about this project and that he's doing it, and he's doing such a great job, and it's so important that people use empathy as they discuss this issue. And I really think that a bridge needs to be made, and I'm just really excited and proud of him.
Thank you, Susan.
Susan, glad you called. Thanks a lot. Here's an email from Nicole, who writes from South Jordan. For 20-plus years, my mom was one of the few non-Mormon high school teachers in a large rural high school in Idaho. Students would confide all sorts of things to her. I can't count the number of times she told me she was worried about gay students who were terrified of coming out to their families, their Mormon families. The self-loathing these teenagers suffered as a result of the conflict between their sexuality and religion, Nicole writes, was terrible. There were a few times over the years when one of them would commit suicide. No one else seemed to know why. We did. Still breaks my heart. Thank goodness for your courage. She writes, you may be saving countless lives. Hmm. I guess that's part of it too, right? I mean, we heard that in Susan's emotion there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's coming from my own experience with sort of suicidal ideation over the years because of the fear of reaction from my culture as I perceived it. And also it takes so much energy, emotional energy, which is hopefully something we'll portray in the film, the depth of emotional energy that exhausts you as you try to reconcile and make sense and figure out how to live your life in a religious orthodox, context. And I do want to acknowledge that this sort of pain and suffering that she's described, I myself have experienced and do want to sort of testify that it is very, very real for thousands and thousands of people. And though the film itself will take on sort of the endeavor of trying to find reconciliation and make sense out of all of this from a open-ended and optimistic perspective, we will definitely take time to hopefully portray with as much intimacy and accuracy as possible the depth of sorrow and anguish and sense of exhausted possibility that exists within the experience of being gay or Mormon or any other Orthodox religion. But at the same time, we're hoping to portray this new experience of our culture that which is one of the reasons why I decided to jump out there now and start documenting my experience and our culture's experience, because I was perceiving a shift, a genuine change coming from the grassroots level of the membership of the church and the culture around the church, that so many individuals, especially in a post-Prop 8 sort of Mormon world, are aching, literally aching, for an opportunity to express themselves and be able to say, no, I do genuinely, to my core, love my gay brothers and sisters inside or outside of the church, and I want to do my part to actively, proactively make a safe peaceful, loving space for them within the church or even without the church. And I'm happy to report that in my filming thus far and interacting with people across the country within the church, literally there's a tidal wave of loving support growing in so many different ways that people engaging with their community and communicating to their friends and neighbors within the church about how they're going to proactively make a safe, open space for their gay brothers and sisters, including my own story at BYU. I'm ecstatic to be able to report that, you know, we've had our sort of official meetings post coming out and post Tribune article and so on. And all of our interactions have been full of love and respect and open-heartedness and support.
But were you scared?
Oh, I
you got called in. I mean, they always say, "Oh, you got called in." So happened? So what happened? You must have been nervous.
Yeah, but my heart was in my throat a little bit, but right. That's okay. But I have to also say, at the same time, there were some natural nerves. At the same time, I really did feel, I think, on a spiritual, you know, I felt a spiritual confirmation within me that this was going to be okay, and that those, not only just the individuals that I work with, but also the institution itself and the culture sort of outside of that institution, all was pointing towards this step in time where somebody like me could come out, be open about my experience, be respectful again about the church and its history with this issue, and find a safe, open, welcoming place. And that's exactly what I found in the conversation. It was very respectful, very loving, you know, sort of reminding me over and over of our friendship and connections with me and my supervisors. Of course, we laid down the specifics of sort of boundaries in terms of honor code at BYU and academic freedom and things like that, just so we're clear with one another. But it wasn't with the sense of, oh, we're going to get you. It was not there in terms of saying, well, here are the boundaries and we're going to get you on that. That was not the tenor or tone. It was definitely loving and respectful. And I'm ecstatic to be able to report that.
But you know, Kendall Wilcox, that there are people out there who are going to be incredulous, and they're going to say, well, it's only a matter of time.
Oh yeah. The reading, sadly, I did read many of the comments from the Tribune article, which I knew I shouldn't have. But
that's probably a bad idea. But anyway.
I know. But that's okay. So many of them were saying, well, amen to his job, or I hope he's updated his resume. And I thought, well, you know, sure, I know where that's coming from. I can empathize with where that mentality is coming from, given the history of the Mormon Church and its institutions with this issue. I understand that. But what they maybe were not privy to, these individuals, was sort of my perspective being a part of, you know, one of the institutions that helps sort of, you know, purvey the Mormon cultural experience, and how I had been reading the tea leaves, or I don't know what you can say in the Mormon culture, but reading the cultural tea leaves and seeing that, you know what, I see where that's coming. I can empathize with why you're saying that, but you know what, I really firmly believe we're headed in a different direction, and now is the time. We're at the tipping point. So, and I think so far that's bearing itself out, and I really think it is a sustainable change. I really do.
Kendall Wilcox is with us. His film project is called Far Between. He's the founder of the Empathy First Initiative as well. And you can find links on our website at KUER.org/Radio West. We'll try to get more calls when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with filmmaker Kendall Wilcox. We're talking about the film that he is producing. He's in the process of creating that he hopes will change the conversation about homosexuality and Mormonism. It's called Far Between. 801-585-WEST, the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. All right, I'm going to give Mary Ellen another chance up in Ogden. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hey. I was just wondering how well the LDS Church does at teaching empathy in general.
Kendall Wilcox, the idea of empathy. You say it's critical to one of the core Mormon beliefs, that is the
Absolutely.
Atonement.
No, absolutely. There's a sort of an institutional answer to that question, and of course, then the more cultural answer to that question. Fundamentally, I'd prefer to go to the sort of the fundamental doctrine of the church, which for me, one of the ways that I think we approach and understand the core component of the Church of Jesus Christ is the belief in Jesus Christ as the Savior, who became the Savior through, you know, the act of the atonement, dying on the cross and through resurrection and taking upon him the sins and sorrows of all of us. But key to that process, in my understanding, was that he actually, it was an empathic endeavor. He actually did the work to get, in a sense, metaphysically or however it worked, into the hearts and minds of every single one of us to fully understand where we're coming from and what our emotional, intellectual, cognitive experiences of our lives is. He walked that path, our path, with us so fully and so deeply that he was empowered by doing so to then be able to do the work of redeeming us from death, sin, sorrows, and all the negativity that we do experience. But he could not have done that had he not first walked our paths with us to fully, deeply, completely, and authentically empathize with us.
Okay, that's the official version, but it has to be sort of filtered through a cultural kind of reaction.
Exactly.
How does that play out?
Well, that's where it gets messy, because we have to take into account then, outside of the doctrine and outside of the church, we have the larger cultural impact of our cultures around us.
Do mainstream Mormons get it?
Do mainstream Mormons
get the idea of empathy? Do they get that? It's when it comes to gay people, it's confusing for a lot. Let's be honest. Do they get that? Do they make that reach, or is there still a disconnect?
Oh, I'm not going to go too far into it, only because I'm not a social scientist, and I'm not going to make broad sweeping statements.
But your gut impression.
But my impressions and my experiences are that we could definitely do better, not just on this issue, but many others, because we're human. But the good thing is, we do know through science in the last decade or so that we are softwired for empathy, and also on a spiritual level. We come with spiritually based instincts of to empathize and reach into and understand one another on a deeply visceral level. And so the blueprint is there, the basic elements are within us, but it's up to us to habituate the practice of empathizing with one another to the point that it becomes so culturally embedded that it is our natural instinct is what we're acting upon. It needs to be supported by our culture. And we're headed in that direction. I'll put it that way. We're headed in that direction because I do believe that I'm not alone in feeling on a powerful level that we have reached a point of sort of impasse where we cannot, this deep level of rancor and misunderstanding and judgment and dismissal and sense of entitlement to judge or assume to understand, all of that has not served us well collectively as a culture. And there's a sense of a zeitgeist even of a realization that has so disserved us that it is unsustainable and we have to find a new way and point ourselves back to our basic instincts, spiritual and neurological, towards empathy.
Let me ask you, hold on, let me take another quick phone call. Matthew's been waiting in Salt Lake. Matthew, we don't have much time, but welcome.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed the conversation. Certainly don't want to have any negative light shed on it, but I was just curious. This has all been very positive, what's been said, and I'm just wondering, has there ever been a time, Mr. Wilcox, when either a higher-ranking official of the church or even somebody, you know, like a bishop or an elders quorum president has said something regarding homosexuality that's genuinely offended you? You seem to find a very positive light to shed. You know, you're talking about Elder Packer's remarks and how they melted your heart, but have you ever been genuinely offended by something that a church official has said?
Kendall, answer that question quickly if you could, because there's something else I want to get to.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matthew.
The short answer is yeah. Yes. But, I mean, I've been in Sunday school class meetings where the conversation is headed towards homosexuality in the gospel, and I've heard people say very fervently, I will not let my child grow up in a world believing that it is okay to be gay. You know, I had the choice to stand up and walk out and be offended or sit with this individual and help actually ask more questions to get into where is he coming from? Why does he feel this way? And there's been moments where I have potentially been hurt and I've been mad. I've been in a meeting with some official members of the church and some things were said that made me absolutely mad. But I chose to, after getting up and walking out for 2 minutes to walk the halls, come back in and continue to sit and listen. Not as a way of acquiescing, absolutely not. But if I can't sit at the table and continue to try and empathize and understand, then we can't move forward. So,
a minute left. Let me ask you this. So it may not be a fair question with such little time, but at some point, I figure you've got to make a choice. You know, you've got to choose. You probably don't see it that way, but you know, in some ways, how long can you do this? I mean, you can't date. You can't take someone to church with you. You have to exist as a solitary soul. Maybe that's an assumption. So how long do you figure you can live like this as not a complete human being? That's what some people would say. Is that an assumption, mm-hmm. finally?
No. I just go back to the fact that I do genuinely, the more and more actually I'm digging into this subject matter and interviewing so many different people across the country who are engaging with this issue in so many different unique ways. And as the culture continues to open up, I'm not talking doctrine or institution, I'm talking culture and how we behave, is becoming more and more of a sustainable situation in life to live in somewhere in the middle. And I do see it open-ended. I really don't see that I'm going to have to make one choice and go black and white. I really don't. And that's a good thing.
Kendall Wilcox, we'll check in with you again on your project, the film called Far Between. I want to talk more about Empathy First Initiative. So we'll have you on again. Kendall Wilcox joined us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Radio West, a production of KUER News. We invite you to join us on our discussion board to continue the conversation. We have technical direction from Mike Anderson, the program produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.